This is a reminder that the podcast you're about to listen to is adult in nature. That means it contains explicit content. Please put your headphones on if you're out in a public place. There you go. You've had your warning. By the way, thanks so much for listening.
All of my life, I've never fit, but I won't complain and I won't quit. I am enormous. Get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me. Can't you see? I'm the kind of woman I'm supposed to be.
Hi there. I am sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, and you are listening to episode 53 of the Body Storytelling Podcast. So before we get into story, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what my week's been like. If you listened to last week's episode of the Body Storytelling Podcast, our collaboration with The Risks Show, you got to hear my story. And it was a hard one, y'all. And the day it came up, I cried all day. And I found out the episode was up on Risk because, I don't know, in the middle of the night, someone had written me and told me their sexual assault story. I woke up, read it, and went, well, I guess the episode's up. Then I listened to the whole episode, and I cried all day, interspersed with reading emails from people who'd been through the same thing. I want to say thank you for sending me your story. If I haven't replied, it's because it's been tough. But I've gotten some really, really touching and moving email this week. I also got this really interesting email from a therapist who specializes in trauma. And he said, thank you so much for talking about disassociation because it's not that well known and it's very important. People don't know about it as much as they should when it comes to trauma. And he also said, I work all day with trauma survivors. And I love to listen to storytelling shows like Body Storytelling because these are stories that reflect growth, healing, and hope. He thanked me for my story. And when you get an email like that and the other emails that I got this week with the personal stories, it makes you go, I guess I made the right decision. So I just wanted to say thank you. And emails are my most favorite thing, you guys, so I'd love to hear from you. I guess we should get on with this show, shouldn't we? So it's the holidays, and I'm really feeling like I want to give you a gift. So we're going to have two stories on this week's episode. It's Christmas and all the other holidays, and I thought maybe what could I give you that felt just right? What did they like? They seem to like stories. So let's do more than usual. Let's talk about our first storyteller. Our first storyteller is a show producer and star. She is incredible. I first saw her on stage at Peaches Christ's Showgirls, and she played Nomi Malone, the main character. She walked around stage in the tiniest little G-string and hardly anything else, maybe some pasties. And she was this comic genius who looked like she's made out of a rubber band. This girl is flexible. She hit such success with that role that she's turned it into a solo show. She is going to be starring in I, Nomi. There'll be information on that in the show notes. And it will be running for a very short time at the Oasis Nightclub here in San Francisco. January 3rd through 5th, I'm going. I'd love to sit next to you while we hold hands and go, isn't she incredibly talented? This is your first story. This one is from April Kidwell.
Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. Good job, everybody. You're doing a great job. Well, the moon was shining through the porthole of his dark cabin, and the waves were crashing against the ship, rocking our bodies with the swell of the ocean. And as he pressed my very eager body against his hard closet, I slowly peeled off his shirt and with my bare hands discovered his beefy, brawny, naked body. And this body I had lusted after for a very long time. 2 weeks. It was my first job out of college. I was working on a cruise ship. I was cast as a lead singer in the production shows aboard Norwegian Cruise Lines. I was 23 years old, which was a very long time ago. And this was my life now, sailing around the world, living out my pop star fantasies, performing to 1,000-person audiences 3 times a week, wearing the most bedazzled, sparkled, bespeckled, spangled, sequined costumes and evening gowns I'd ever seen, and singing some of my favorite songs with a whole crew of backup dancers with like French buns and cheetah print thongs and character heels. And it was glorious. It was like everything I had fantasized about, because for like 10 years prior, I would go to bed with earplugs in and like fantasize about being a pop star with backup dancers. So it was pretty fucking awesome. And so this ship was the Norwegian Star. And we were traveling to and around Alaska. And my first night on the ship, my company manager tells me, you know, being the principal singer is a very prestigious position. It's actually one of the most coveted jobs on the ship. And you have all the privileges, the best privileges. You have your own cabin with your own full-size bed and a porthole, because it's very important to see the sun when you live on a boat. You get to go in all the restaurants and all the public spaces, because it's actually slave labor working on a cruise ship for everybody else involved. If you don't know that, I'm sorry. I got to be in port as long as I wanted, because I only worked 16 hours a week. It was pretty fucking rad. Didn't really set me up well for the rest of my life in reality. And so I got to do amazing, like on this ship, we got to do a 70s rock review called Band on the Run. And it was a medley of like Wings and Queen and Heart and Styx. And the whole village people got a section. And I got to sing Donna Summer's Last Dance wearing like a red sequin evening gown at the top of the risers. Like, I'm not a riffer, so it was like, it was very interesting. And there were ballroom dancers like spinning and stuff. And then we did an Andrew Lloyd Webber review called Music of the Night. And I got to sing Memory from Cats. And Cats was my favorite musical growing up, so this was like fucking heaven. I used to take the mirror off the wall and put it on the couch in my living room and play the Cats DVD and teach myself the choreography, because I was a fucking nerd. And so I'm on this ship, and there are 67 different nationalities on this ship. And so I make friends with this wonderful, tall, beautiful, fabulous gay man jeweler from St. Lucia named Sheldon. And we have a great time together. And we go out on a date, just the two of us. And we're up in the steakhouse. And in walks this hunky, beefy, 6'3", golden, glowing, tanned skin. Like, so beefy he doesn't have a neck. But so beefy he doesn't need a neck. And like the brightest green eyes and the biggest megawatt smile I'd ever seen. Like, this guy was so fucking hot. He looked like he just walked off the set of 300, which was exactly the movie that I masturbated to for many years. And so he walks by this hot, beefy sex stud in a crisp officer's uniform. And he gives me this megawatt smile. I'm like, Sheldon, who the fuck is that? He's like, oh, that? That's the ship's doctor. From South Africa. And his name is Xander Vanderpool. Like, pole as in penis. So, naturally, I became obsessed. And the very mention of the name Xander Vanderpool sent like earthquake shivering in my vagina and panties and all of it. And I mean, even like Dr. Vanderpool, it's like, so my cast had a field day with that and made fun of me relentlessly. But luckily, my company manager was very sympathetic to my cause and would write me the most ridiculous doctor's notes. And I would come up with any reason I possibly could to go see Dr. Vanderpool, Xander Vanderpool, in his office. Like, oh, Dr. Vanderpool, I have a hangnail. I don't know what to do. Dr. Vanderpool, I sprained my ankle. And now I have to hobble around the ship for a week looking like a dick. And then I like try to convince him. It's like, I think I have GI. My shit is coming out like spackle. And that's when he explained to me that they put stool softener in the food on the ship. And that it wasn't GI. Like, there, it's a very sensitive piping system. So if you ever go on a cruise ship and you notice that the food is salty, they do this for a reason. Try doing that for 3 fucking years. And so I find out it's Xander's last week on the ship, and I'm absolutely devastated. But Sheldon is throwing a goodbye party for Xander in his cabin, and I was invited. And so I'm just hanging out, lingering next to him, like not saying anything. We've never actually had a conversation. I'm just always like... And I'm just standing there with my $5 like bottle of wine in a red plastic cup, just like... But Xander, I feel vibes. It's not just me. And I'm not just delusional. And so then Sheldon very kindly takes my hand. And then he takes Xander's hand. He puts my drink down first. Continuity. Puts my drink down. Grabs my hand. Grabs Xander's hand. And then he looks at Xander and he goes, you know she likes you. And I'm mortified. And then he turns to me and goes, you know he likes you. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, yeah. And then he puts our hands together and he says, now go do something about it. And so we walk down the hall to his cabin and we get inside without saying a word, enter his dark cabin, and it all starts. The taking off the shirt, pushing me against his closet, grinding his dick against my pussy. And we start smashing our faces into each other, and I can feel the scruff of his face grinding on my skin, and I love every fucking second of it. And that's when I have this realization, like, I'm about to fuck a man. I've had sex with many guys, but I've never fucked a man. And he was 39, and I was 23. So that was fucking hot. That was like a whole lifetime, like happening. Like, I became a woman. I knew it. I was very aware. I am becoming a woman in this sexual experience. And just the sexiest, beefiest, hottest sex of my life for 9 fucking hours. Where there were no breaks. It was like definitely before midnight to like past the sun coming up. And he's leaving the next morning. He's getting off the ship and we're fucking each other's brains out in his room. And 3/4 of the way in, I'm like on top grinding him. And I'm not usually comfortable being on top, even still to this day. But at that point, there were no reservations. And so I'm on top, fucking living my dreams. And then suddenly, his wonderfully big giant cock was like pushing on the part of my body that I feel like is connected to my poop. And I'm just like, I'm still orgasm. The whole thing is an orgasm, but I'm just very mindful of, I'm shitting on his balls. Oh my God, I'm shitting on his balls. So very discreetly, I'd be like grinding on him and I'd put my hand back there and I'd wipe my butt. I'd be like, I have to go to the bathroom right now. I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom and check my hand and nothing was there. And so it was fine. But I did this like 5 times because I swore to God, poop was coming out. And so the sun is up, but we had shut the porthole door because we wanted some privacy. And he, you know, when he's done fucking my brains out for 9 hours, he does it with a big smile on his face and walks his cute tush up to the bathroom. And I'm just like, I'm adjusting to a penis not being in my body. And then I look on the bed and there are shit stains all over the sheets. And it was like somebody took a paintbrush and drew racetracks all over it in brown. And I'm fucking freaking out, like, oh my fucking God, what do I do? What do I do? So I get the genius idea, I'll just throw the duvet over it and lay on top, like. Nothing to see here. And he comes back out, and I refuse to leave the bed. And then he gets a knock on the door, so he hands me a towel and I wrap it around. And it's the hotel director coming to say goodbye to Xander, and my hair is out to fucking here. And I have a gaping, like, scab on my chin, like the size of a silver dollar. Like, the skin completely, like, tore off from making out so hard. So the hotel director, my boss, comes by to say goodbye to Xander. I'm just sitting there in a towel, like, hey. Then the cruise director comes by to say goodbye to Xander. Then the captain of the ship. Then the whole fucking spa department. Secrets out. And so we say goodbye, thinking that we'd never see each other again, and kind of heartbroken. And I, after he left, I could not sit down for a week. And so I wrote him, I miss you. This was the best sex I've ever had in my life. By the way, I think I have a UTI and vaginal bacteriitis, whatever you call that. Can I have a prescription, please? And he was such a gentleman. He wrote me a prescription. It was great. And years go by and I think, the days of Xander Vanderpool, and still people were bringing it up because everybody knew. And then a couple years go by, I'm on a new ship. It's not as glamorous anymore. I fall down the stairs with my heels clacking. It's fun. And I'm on a new ship and somebody told me that Xander Vanderpool was on this new ship, and it's 3 years later. We're on the same fucking ship. Mm-hmm. And then he finds out that I'm on the ship same day. So we find each other. We're like, we're going to have sex tonight. Date in your cabin. And this time he didn't have a full bed. It was like, I don't know why he got degraded to a bunk bed situation, but I guess it's humbling. But this time I had something to like hold on to for 7 hours. No poop this time, so that was a plus. And then we decide to go on our first date. And we go out for sushi on the ship, and realizing we've never actually had a conversation. How interesting. And we're both feeling these genuine feelings, and he's telling me, he's like, I've already told my whole spa department, all my nurses, I really think you're the one, and I would want to take you back to South Africa with me. And I'm thinking I want you to meet my family and be my wife and spend the rest of my life with me, your life with me. And I'm like, okay. And then I see this lady walk by on the ship, and it's like she looks kind of tacky. And the normal, typical physique of somebody, a guest on a cruise ship, big in America and, you know, enjoying life, as I like to put it. And I thought this lady was cute. And then Xander's like, ugh, what a waste of space. What a pig. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's gross. And I'm like, okay, continuing the meal. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, or that was weird. I don't like that internally. I don't intuitively. This does not feel good. And then the waitress comes by, and she's very apologetic, like doing her waitressing server duties. Like, I'm going to take your plates. Would you like anything else? And he's like, ugh. And then makes his face to me like, ugh, horrible. How dare she? And I'm just like, you're the grossest fucking person I've ever seen. And then I decided not to take any of his calls anymore after that. Even we had a week left on the ship, and I just thought ignoring him is the solution, is the mature route out of this one. And I get hate mail from him after he gets off the ship saying, April, I am not one of your shits. And what I realized from this experience is that I have values. And the way that the people that I date or engage with, or anybody in my life, the way that they treat other people is so important to me. And especially servers. And especially the way people look. Like, these things matter to me. Kindness and love and respect and gratitude. And he never once exercised any of those attributes in our time together. Just really good sex. And I realized that even though he was the sexiest person I'd ever fucked, he was the ugliest person I'd ever been with. And so, yes, he was one of my shits.
Coming up on the end of the year, and I'd like to ask you, if you could just share this podcast. You can do it on social media. You can do it through email. You can call a friend. You can sit down over tea or coffee and tell somebody face to face about this cool podcast that you listen to. If you tell just one friend and each one of you do it, we're going to grow. Just talking about it is so important. You can also go and review us on iTunes. We're also on Spotify. You letting other people know that you love this, that's what it's all about. One of the best gifts you could ever give me. And I thank you in advance for that. Ladies, how old were you when you got your first period? You are not going to believe my answer to that question. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Lola. Lola is a subscription service. They deliver organic cotton tampons, pads, liners, and 100% natural cleansing wipe right to your door in discreet packaging. No more running to the drugstore late at night. Everything you need comes right to you. You select the type of absorbency, the number of boxes you need, and you can adjust the frequency of delivery whenever you want. And then there's Lola's sex products. Lola's personal lubricant is gynecologist approved and hypoallergenic. Lola's condoms are ultra thin and lubricated, and they've also got brilliant products like cramp care multivitamins and I really thought this was smart, a first period kit for new menstruators. Maybe you have a young human in your house who might find themselves in need. It comes with a guide on what to expect when you start your period. Boy, I wish I'd had that when I started menstruating. So how old was I when I started? I was 10. And that's a huge chunk of my life spent in the feminine hygiene aisle and feeling judged when I went to the drugstore to buy condoms and lube. But you don't have to do that. Give Lola a try. And if you visit mylola.com and enter the promo code Dixie at checkout, you'll get 40% off your subscription. Use the code Dixie, D-I-X-I-E, for home delivery of feminine products and sex supplies with free shipping. Make life simpler. Try Lola. If you've heard of author and sex advice columnist Dan Savage, you know that I'm a big fan and I've had him on stage at Body Storytelling a few times. Once upon a time in the green room, he met Rachel Lark, our musical sidekick and beloved musical artist. And they hit it off. In fact, he hired her to write a song for the Savage Love Cast's live show. And we're going to play it on this episode. She wrote it just for Dan Savage. It's called There's Nothing Sexy About Christmas. This is Rachel Lark.
Christmas bells are ringing, stores are having sales. This time of year is always such a joy. Families get together and Santa never fails to put a smile on the face of every girl and boy. But my love, I need you to know, just because this is my favorite holiday doesn't mean I like it when you buy me Santa's little helper lingerie. Well, there's nothing sexy about Christmas. Believe your Santa fantasies up there in the chimney, please. Hey, there's nothing sexy about Christmas. Whoa, I don't mean to yuck your yum, but take that tinsel off your bum. This holiday is nothing but wholesome, so why you gotta turn it into fulsome? I'll leave my Christmas alone. I'm a kinky lady, and you're a kinky guy, and I'm down for almost everything you try. But everyone thinks that everything you like should be part of every part of your life. Remember how I explained just because I have cat doesn't mean I like cat stuff. So why assume that because I like spanking I'd be into wearing jingle bell handcuffs? Well, there's nothing sexy about Christmas. That I'm GGG, but get these snowballs off of me. Hey, there's nothing sexy about Christmas. Whoa, it's my favorite time of year, but let's make one thing crystal clear. This holiday's about a virgin. It's far too easy a perversion. I'll leave my Christmas alone. Make me happy. Let me out of this sleigh. Unstrap me. I'll leave my Christmas alone. I'm not squicked out by holidays per se. It's just that this one is so pure in every way. The most I want to do is steal a kiss or two beneath the wreath of mistletoe at night. Can't you see that to me you're sexy? Helpful you can be. Maybe when the family's gone away, I'll pull your sweater off and say, baby, fuck me by the tree. Fine, there's something sexy about Christmas. Whoa, now that it's all said and done, I'm no longer stressed, let's have some fun. Hey, there's something sexy about Christmas. Whoa, cleaning up tonight, won't you tie me in those Christmas lights? When holiday plans are haunting, being sexy is far too daunting. So if you really want me in that elf outfit, wait till December 26th. Just leave my Christmas alone. Leave my
You know how you fall in love with something? There's this show, maybe, that comes out and you love it so much and you can't wait for the next episode and then it's canceled. Let's make sure the Body Storytelling Podcast isn't canceled. If you could go to patreon.com/body, B-A-W-D-Y, and support us at any level you can manage, it means we can keep going and growing and that this podcast won't stop. I have a favorite show that was just canceled, and I'm so sad, and I don't know what to do about it. I'm just going to pine for it, but I can't change it. But you can change things. Go to patreon.com/body, support this podcast, and thank you in advance for your support. Can I ask you for a favor? I'd really like to get to know you better. You're a listener of this show, and I want to know how to improve it, what you like. So if you could, please go to bodystorytelling.com and click on the survey tab. It's a really quick survey. It won't take but a minute. And the best part is one lucky survey entrant will win a WeVibe gift set with 10 toys and accessories worth over $350 from babeland.com. Please go to bodystorytelling.com and click on the survey tab. Thanks. Our next storyteller holds a PhD in political psychology. She is the author of the blog Love Letters to a Unicorn, and she is the author of The Big Workbook for Submissives. She co-hosts the Body Positive podcast, Fat Chicks on Top. She's a writer, a performer, and a storyteller. This story is from Auntie Vice.
I'm standing in the middle of a warehouse in Brooklyn. It's about 100, 150 people there. Ropes are hanging from this 25-foot ceiling, and there's a couple in the middle of the room starting a suspension scene. Around the edges of the walls, there are St. Andrew's crosses and massage tables, and people are doing other kinky things. And I'm looking for a guy that I only know by his screen name, Naughty Boy. Yeah. And I see him in a corner next to a massage table, and there's a smaller table next to him, and it's a tray full of knives, bright, shiny knives. Yeah. So I walk over and introduce myself, and we exchange some pleasantries. And he says, "So are you ready to do this?" I'm like, "Yeah." And inside I'm like, "No, but I'm not gonna wimp out." And he goes, "Okay, what's your favorite color?" I said, "Green." And he pops out a briefcase and opens it up like the guys used to do on the Lower East Side of New York with fake watches. But this one has rows and rows of little pocket knives. And he pulls out a green one, and he closes it. He's like, "Okay." And he smiles. And I'm thinking, you are remarkably casual for what we're about to do. See, I'm in New York, and I was teaching at SubCon, which is a conference for submissives. And the organizers, as part of this conference, brought in a ton of professional dominants and tops, and they'd sent all the participants their names and their specialties and said, "If you want to play with them on Saturday night, here you go." So when I was getting ready for the conference, I'd gone through all the names, and I'm thinking, do I want to do something that I've done before, but with somebody who's really talented? You know, whipping scene, get lit on fire, or do I want to try something new? Because, you know. And as I'm going through, Naughty Boy does fire. So I was initially looking at him. But he also does knives. And for most of my life, knives were on the hard no list. I wasn't going to do it. And it's not for some esoteric I'm anti-violence thing. It was not a random fear of knives. It's because for most of my life, knives have been on my body in a very negative way. See, I was a cutter for 20 years. I used it as a form of self-harm. The first time I was 11, it was the summer between 6th and 7th grade. And I was one of those latchkey kids in San Jose, and I'm home after band camp waiting for my parents to get home. And I'm lying in my room in a t-shirt and shorts, and I start getting hungry. And that inner voice starts. It's like, "You fat fuck. How do you want to eat? You can't possibly want a snack. You are so disgusting. Look at those fat fucking thighs. You are worthless. No one's ever going to love you." Right? It's like worse than any Twitter troll I've ever had. Right? It's laying into me. And I start thinking, you know, if I could just cut off the gross parts, there might be something to love. So I got up, I went into my parents' office and opened the roll-top desk, and I got out one of my dad's X-Acto knives that he used to do mats for his photographs with. And I go back into my room, and I start outlining on my stomach the parts I want to go away. And I'm watching the blood beat up in the cuts, and I'm just hoping I have enough in me to just cut off the parts I don't like. And I didn't. And so I sopped up the blood with toilet paper, and I'm thinking, fuck, I'm still hungry. And that started 20 years of this, right? And it moved from my stomach to my thighs. When my tits came in, it was horrible. Like, I just wanted to cut them off. And then to my arms. And every time, I would pray that I would find the strength to go deep enough and obliterate myself. And, you know, as I got older, I realized this is not normal thinking, right? This is not normally what you do. And I started to work to improve how I felt about myself and at least stop the cutting. So by the time I'm in New York in this warehouse, a knife hadn't touched my body in 10 years. And it's terrifying to me to think I might re-trigger all of that. But I'm like, no, I'm here. I'm teaching classes on growing your submission and deepening your submission. And I need to face this. And I had chosen to do a knife scene because knives... kink is exactly the opposite of cutting for me. Where cutting was about hate and obliterating myself and disconnection, kink is all about generativity and connection and love and growth. So I had talked to Naughty Boy about this and let him know a little bit about this. And so we're there, and he goes, okay, when you're ready, you know, strip down and we'll start. So I start taking off my clothes, and he starts wiping down the massage table with an alcohol disinfectant. And that's incredibly triggering because at this point in my life, I fucking hate doctors, right? Really, I can't stand them. So it's triggering, and I'm doing what I do when I get triggered to calm myself, and I start getting really methodical. And I'm taking off all my clothes, and I'm folding them very neatly and laying on the chair in the order I'm going to have to put them back on. Like Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory, been really proud of this organization. Like, I'm calling myself. So I get on the massage table, and I can smell this disinfectant, and I'm trying to talk myself down. And I start going, okay, it's okay. You're not in a doctor's office. As far as you know, he's not an MD. You know, I hadn't asked. I didn't know his real name. It's okay. It's just a random guy from the internet. You're in a warehouse in Brooklyn with knives. You're going to be good. And I start laughing at myself, because it's like, I'm saying you're naked with a guy and knives in Brooklyn you don't know, and this is a good thing. Okay, we can do this. And I feel his hands on my back through the nitrile gloves he's wearing, and it immediately centers me. It brings me back to that kink space where I start focusing, and my breathing calms, and the world starts to fall away, and time starts to disappear, and I'm no longer hearing music. I'm not hearing people or anything. And I feel that first blade hit my back. And he's working on me, and it's this razor-sharp blade. I can feel him tracing around my tattoos and not cutting through them. So I'm focusing on which tattoos he's moving around. And then he moves down to my sides, and that 11-year cold comes back, and I can just think of how big and disgusting I am. But I'm like, I'm going to focus. I'm going to power through this, right? And his hands move down, and the blades move down, and he starts going across my ass in these long strokes. And the chef in me is like, oh, my God, I know how a tomato feels. This is kind of amazing. Like, I need him as a sous chef. And he's doing these long cuts on my ass. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of getting into this. And the blade moves down into my inner thighs. And instead of freaking out, I'm like, I'm getting into this. And I start thinking, I wonder if he knows I'm wet. And it's such a positive, sexy response. And I have no idea how long this has been going on. Like, it's just me and him in the moment. And he starts moving back up, and then he takes the tip of the blade and runs it all the way up my spine to the back of my neck. And, like, I'm covered in goosebumps, like, head to toe. And he's like, how are you? And I, like, tap the bench so he'll take the knife off, because I do have some self-preservation at this point. And he takes it off and said, you know, I'm okay. And I sit up and he gives me a hug and he wipes off the blade with disinfectant and folds it up and gives it to me as a token. Which I'm sure for him, he does for a lot of people. I mean, this is what he does. But for me, it was an incredibly meaningful thing, right? I have this little green pocket knife from him. And it's not like I've ever gotten real okay with my body. I still don't love it, right? I'm agender. I have a lot of dysmorphia. I don't feel comfortable. And there's still days I want to take the double Ds and put them on the shelf and just be done with them, right? I want the Mr. Potato Head body. You pop off one part you don't like and pop off on another, right? And I'm bipolar, so when the mood swings hit, it makes it much worse. But what I'm left with is, instead of being back in the place where I want to destroy my body, I'm willing to fight for it now and make sure it's okay. And on those days where that gets really hard to embrace, I have a little green knife that reminds me I can do this, and if I do it right, I might get a little wet.
I'd like to say thank you to our sponsor of the Bango Prizes that we give away at live body storytelling shows. Good Vibrations in San Francisco and Babeland in Seattle have been giving us prizes to give to you guys for being brave and smart and outgoing in any of the things that are hard, talking to strangers at a show. We like to reward you, and they make that possible. If you want to know more about them, you can learn more about Good Vibrations and Babeland in the show notes. So I just did a live body storytelling. I had people come up to me at the show to tell me that they had specially arranged a flight from Toronto to come be at the San Francisco show. There was somebody there from Glastonbury in the UK, and it was his first body storytelling. If you make flight or hotel plans, which I've been getting emails asking me for upcoming shows, if you travel, please come up and say hi to me at a show. I want to thank you, give you a big hug if you're up for that, and show you that I appreciate you valuing what we do. So I'm about to tell you the dates of upcoming live body storytelling shows. We're going to start on January 9th in San Francisco. That will be at the Verity Club. On January 17th in Seattle, the theme is Shenanigans. That shows at the Rebar Seattle. And I am also staying that weekend for the PodCon conference, the podcasting conference in Seattle that happens that weekend. If you happen to be there, send me an email and let me know. Maybe we can have coffee or something. On February 3rd, I am doing Notorious. It is a celebration of the co-author of The Ethical Slut, Dossie Easton. Dossie Easton will be celebrating her 75th birthday with us at Body. It happens to be the 50th anniversary of an adventure that led to the writing of The Ethical Slut. If you want to know what the adventure was, you want to hear the story, please come be at that show with us. That is in San Francisco on Sunday, February 3rd. On February 14th, that's Valentine's Day, I'm going to do some sex and love theme. Haven't figured it out. If you have a great idea, let me know. Somebody wants to do, a lot of people keep suggesting Love Hurts, and I'm like, that's great for a kink theme. I don't know. Maybe it'll be Love Hurts. I don't know. But on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day, I will be performing in Seattle. Would love to have you celebrate that special holiday with us. On February 23rd, in San Francisco, it is Body Storytelling's 12-year anniversary. We're going to do two shows that night. We are going to do a special anniversary show, and then we will follow it with Best of Body. I'm about to tell you how to start voting for people. Voting opens up the beginning of January, and you can vote for body storytellers in the San Francisco Bay Area. The winners will be on stage that night as the Best of Body. It's a really special night. If you're going to fly in, that's the one to fly in for, the 12-year anniversary show. It's on a Saturday night. It's a big show, two shows back to back. and I'd love to have you there. If you have questions or if you'd like to pitch me a story, I'm Dixie@bodystorytelling.com. You can go to our website, bodystorytelling.com, to buy tickets. And I'm going to see you in person really soon, I hope. It's time to say thank you. Thank you to podcast producer Marty Garcia, to project manager Dana Hanna, to sound engineer David Grossoff, to video producer and archivist Joe Moore, and a special thank you goes out to you. I am sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, and you have been listening to the Body Storytelling Podcast. Here's a peek at what's next.
And then finally he says, listen, I hope this doesn't matter or anything, but I thought it might be important to tell you how old I am. And I was like, oh God, I'm not sure where this is going. He goes, I am but 20. And I said, I'm a little older than that.